Thursday night, it's time for Race Trackers. Last week, the racing world looked to Oaklawn Park in Arkansas and to Keeneland in Lexington, Kentucky. We saw one champ return victorious and another suffer a short, tough loss. This week, we take a respite from the Kentucky Derby chase and instead look to the Charlestown, West Virginia for the Charlestown Classic. A particularly light week in racing, but still a few things to discuss. I'm Bill Gottimer. My co-host Mike Monroe is celebrating a birthday tonight. We'll be joined later on by John Stetton. Be happy to take some phone calls from callers this week and discuss some of the some things you may have on your mind. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday, and note that the replays are always available on the internet and on the web. Once again, we speak about last week. Last week, Keeneland was the focus of most of the action for the older horses, but Oaklawn Park in Arkansas saw the return of Classic Empire in the Arkansas Derby. Classic Empire was last year's two-year-old champion, had lost his only start earlier this year, and suffered some significant training setbacks. A significant question about whether or not he was the same horse that he was as a two-year-old champ. But on Saturday in the Arkansas Derby, he closed willingly against a tough field and got up in the final strides. And depending upon who you speak to, either was very impressive and will move forward or ran too hard and will be tough-pressed to come back in 3 weeks in the Kentucky Derby. Classic Empire has always been a favorite a fan favorite, and really has never run a bad race prior to this year. So there was much consternation when he ran poorly in his first start, and then, as I said, trained poorly. Mark Cassie seems to be confident that he has him back on track, took some unusual steps of taking the horse to a training center as opposed to a racetrack to try to start back from scratch one and get him back in training mode. He, as I said, he closed willingly and has a closing style that many of the horses in the Kentucky Derby this year will have. It remains to be seen, in my opinion, whether or not that race was too difficult a race for him just 3 weeks from the Kentucky Derby. It'll be interesting to see how well he trains. Also at Oaklawn, we saw Whitmore, a four-year-old, stupendous sprinter this year, a horse who's now undefeated going one turn, a horse, Whitmore, who tried last year in the Classics in the Kentucky Derby, but found himself to be ill-suited for longer distances in two turns. Once he's turned back to sprint distances, he's proven to be extremely tough, and I would expect he's probably the best sprinter we have in this country right now. I understand his next effort will be at Churchill Downs on Kentucky Derby Day, and eventually, I guess, we'll see him come east and run in New York. But Whitmore is the real thing. He won easily in a very fast time, and looks as if he's poised to just have a tremendous sprinting season. On the same card, Midnight Storm was a huge favorite, who disappointed tremendously. Under Mike Smith, invaded from California, had it his own way at odds on, and was unable to maintain it, and finished a tiring third. With that, I'm interrupt right now. I'm very pleased to announce that Kieran McLaughlin will be on our show right now, and I want to welcome him to the show. Good evening, Kieran. Thank you for joing us.
Hey. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Kieran, we were just talking about Oakland Park's card last week. We hadn't yet gotten to Keeneland, but congratulations to you. You were by far the star of the Keeneland show on Saturday, winning a record four races on one card.
Yeah, it was a fabulous day for myself and my team and the Dolphin. They're dislocated right across the street from Keeneland, and I grew up there, so it was a special day for all of us.
Yeah, you're one of the only two trainers to ever win four races on one card at Keeneland, that August racetrack that just really is, in my mind, the epitome of American racing. And as you said, it's Godolphin is right across the street. And when you're on the show previously, you've told our listeners that it's particularly special to win there because the people who bred and raised the horses for Godolphin and for Shadwell get to see them in action in the afternoon.
Shadwell is literally right across the street also. So, you know, there's a lot more that goes into racing horses than just the afternoon with the jockey that people see. I mean, there's mating that goes on and the raising of them and grooms that take care of them, the managers that are there, the key people at Godolphin. You saw maybe in the winner's circle, there might have been 40 or 50 people in the winner's circle. And 10 or 12 of them might have been McLaughlin, so because I have a lot of family there. But it is great to win in Lexington and celebrate each win with all the people from the farms.
Well, the day started off easily enough for you, sort of winning a maiden race, I believe, and then it culminated, and it just got better throughout the day. Do you want to speak of each of them, or should we just get to the grade one winner?
No, it's an interesting day because, you know, as you are racing fans and people that bet on horses, sometimes they think it's easier than it really is, and I thought it was an interesting day. Tasteful. I told Joelle Rosario that she was close in her only race at Gulfstream. She got in a lot of trouble down on the inside, so you should be close, break, and if she takes you there, no problem, ride your race. Well, she hops at the start and ends up last. I said, well, we can't win from there, I told my daughter, and all of a sudden here she came circling 8 wide and got up to win. So that was a great day. And then we come to Zenner, and Joe Bravo came to the paddock, and he said, you know, I was thinking that my last time I just sat and tried to lay fifth, sixth off the pace, he said, I'd really like to put him on the lead. And I said, great minds think alike. I said, I think you need to break. There's not that much pace, and go. Put him in the game. He breaks, gets squeezed out the back, he goes, and then he circles the field to win by a length, 3/4 of a length. And then Watershed was next in the alley, and Paco rode him. And I didn't say a whole lot to him other than it looked like there was a pretty good four or five of them want to go. So we should see a nice trip, whether you're 4th to 6th, you know, just ride him with confidence. So that race went perfect. Everything went well. And then Dickinson, we thought there would be one or two pace setters and we could just, you know, track them. And she's tracking in third and cannot get through at the 3/16 pole to the 8th pole, gets stopped. And Lady Eli gets a jump on us, and he follows her and comes running to nail her a nose. So three of the four races were much different than we saw on paper and what we thought would happen. So it's great to win a grade one with a homebred. They were all homebreds for Godolphin. And to win a grade one with a filly makes their value go way up. And the only grade one I've ever won there at Keeneland was her mother. Little Belle won the Alcibiades in 2008. So it was pretty neat to, you know, just the way the whole day went.
That's tremendous. Well, I mean, I want to speak a little bit about Watershed. That must have been particularly satisfying for you because that's a horse that in my opinion, seemed to have tremendous amount of talent, and it seems like you were always trying to find the right combination to him to show that talent. He sprinted for a while. He even tried him on the grass. and it seemed like he was always on the verge of breaking through, it seems like this was the trick.
Yeah, we took him to Dubai there for a little while too, and you're right. He's always been a real talented horse and one of the barn favorites. He's a real kind horse to be around, does everything right. And I don't know my percentage going from turf to dirt, but we tried him on the turf. He ran really pretty well. He only got beat two lengths and had some trouble in the race. But we don't run that many turf to dirt, but it worked out great this time. And we might adjust our Brooklyn plan and go to the Pimlico Special. It just works out timing-wise nice, and we're thinking about the Pimlico Special or the Brooklyn on June 10th.
Okay, well, the Pimlico Special, of course, has all the history in the world, right? That's the race that Seabiscuit and War Admiral ran in. So that's certainly a storied race. It's always fun to win a race on the big cards.
Invisor won there also for me. So we have some fond memories of it too.
It's getting back to Dickinson winning the Grade One. That was a particularly tough field, and Lady Eli is such a crowd favorite. And as you said, she got the better trip than the team that you did, and yet you caught her anyway. What was the sense there? I mean, obviously you everyone who was rooting for you and your team was elated, but did it sound like the crowd took a little gasp when Lady Eli got beaten a short nose again?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody, even myself, root for her, but not when you're in against her in the starting day. We want to beat her. But, you know, what's interesting, my brother Neil and I were talking, and I had said it to someone, and then he said it the next day. Had we got through on the rail and opened up two lengths at the eighth pole, Lady Eli might have run us down because she likes to run at a target. Probably the one a few times that someone came to run her down. So she might have got there a little bit too soon. So it might have worked out in our advantage. But Chad Brown and his team have done a great job with that filly, and it's a great story. And, you know, she's almost undefeated. And it's great to see her back for another year. But, you know, it's hard on us trainers that are trying to beat her because she is that good.
Right. What do you have next in mind for Dickinson? Have you mapped out anything for him?
For her, June 10th, the Just a Game, Grade One is on the undercard of Belmont, going 1 mile. So we're hoping Lady Eli wants to go a little further than that and chooses a different route, but 1 mile on June 10th.
Yeah, it's nice to have beaten her once. You don't need to face her again if you don't have to. That's fun.
No, Centurio Italia faced her several times last year, and we couldn't beat her. So.
Well, yeah, you had a tremendous, tremendous day, and it's just obviously a day to remember, as you said, being from Lexington itself. It's always special to win there. You had a little fun, I guess. I understand. I assume you were at the roast of Dwayne Lucas that took place.
Yes, Monday evening. We were hoping to roast him a little more, but Frank Miramani did a fabulous job. He hosted it, and he's great with his race calls and doing Wayne himself, and he just was great. And then all of us assistants got to, you know, tell a little story, but we were pretty easy on him. We were hoping to roast him a little more, but it's hard to get after him. We all have so much respect for him, and he's, you know, been a great teacher and coach to all of us.
Yeah, sometimes not a comfortable position to roast someone who you had such admiration for.
Yeah.
Well, just congratulations on a tremendous day, a record day. Again, it was more than a tremendous day. It was a record day, and it just even watching it on television, the TVG people couldn't really keep track whether it was three or four, and I knew it was the fourth, but they were a little. Getting back as to how many you had won, and you know, I didn't know that no one else had really done that. That had only been done one time before, but congratulations on that. Just wonderful. Any thoughts that you have, anybody you want to speak about for our listeners to keep an eye on, or anything? I guess it's too early for most of your two-year-olds that they're just
We haven't received too many two-year-olds yet. We hope to receive them starting soon. We have one or two. But Mo Heyman's back and ready to run on May 6th in the Westchester at Belmont. It's not going to be an easy race. I think Connect runs in it, I heard. So we're just really excited about getting him going again. He always struggled at keeping his weight on, and he's put on 140 pounds when he went home and for 4 months off. And so he looks great, training great, and we're ready to get him back going. So we're really excited about him. And then we have a couple of really nice maiden three-year-olds. Marshall Plan got beat a neck in his first start by Spikestown at Kingland for Stone Street, really nice horse. And Fayek was third his first start from post 13 at Gulfstream, and then he ran back and showed a little bit too much speed. He wants to come from off the pace, but he's a half to Rachel Alexander and by Malibu Moon, so we're excited about him. And, we have a few other horses that we are hopeful for to have a good year, but those are a couple that we're excited about.
Well, excellent. We'll look forward for them. And I don't want to keep you. I know the morning comes early, and I really just wanted to congratulate you on a record-setting day, and we always appreciate you joining us here. And I know we always, our listeners always appreciate hearing directly from you. So congratulations again.
Thank you very much, and thanks for supporting and promoting horse racing. You do a great job.
Oh, thank you very much. Karen McLaughlin, everyone. Good night, Karen.
All right, thanks. Good night.
Well, that's interesting. We heard from one. That's directly from Karen to two three-year-old fillies who are maidens who are looking forward to some big things from Marshall Plan and Fayette. So that's both of whom ran well already, but are looking forward to breaking their maiden and going on to bigger things. Also, Mo Heyman returning. Of course, last year Mo Heyman was among the choices in the Derby preps, and as Kieran said, had some difficulty maintaining his weight, and by the time the Florida Derby came around, really kind of took a little bit out of him. And they regrouped and hoping to have a big four-year-old year. A lot of excitement there. As we spoke about, Keeneland just was dominated, largely by Kieran's four winner day. But also on the card, Wesley Ward ran Lady Aurelia, who was so impressive last year, winning over at Ascot in England, but came back this year before she goes back to England again, and was extremely impressive, winning the Giants Causeway at Keeneland. There was some speculation as to whether or not she would be ready, and some speculation as to whether, at a short price, whether she was a good value. But apparently she clearly was, and she's looks very impressive again. And Wesley Ward was interviewed and said they're off to England one more time with her. So that's obviously exciting. The Jenny Wiley, which we spoke about, which Kieran won with Dickinson, was featured Catch a Glimpse and Time in Motion, as well as Lady Eli, the aforementioned Lady Eli. Both Catch a Glimpse and Time in Motion were a little disappointing. Catch a Glimpse actually tired to finish last and didn't put in her normal game effort through the stretch. We'll have to see how she rebounds from that. Time in Motion ran evenly, and we spoke last week with Jimmy Toner, and he said that this might not be her best distance and she might need a race to start. And she ran kind of evenly, and I understand they'll add blinkers to her for the next time, and she probably should get something out of that race. I would assume she'll benefit by that race and set her up to go a little bit longer next time. We have a few minutes. If anyone would like to give us a call, I'd greatly appreciate it. The call-in number is 646-716-4442. 646-716-4442. We'll go over some of the news before we have our next guest on. And we was saddened to hear that Tepin, just a champion grass filly from last year, has been retired. She took off the winter, and she didn't train as forwardly as they had hoped when she came back, and she seems like she's done enough racing, and she wasn't showing the enthusiasm that she had always shown, and they figured she's done enough, and they've retired her, and she's off to the breeding shed. So Tepin, of course, just absolutely had a tremendous year in 2016, you know, winning everywhere, including winning at Ascot, another U.S. runner winning in Ascot, and she just did enough and has been retired. Some congratulations go out to our former guest from a few weeks ago, trainer Ray Handel. He won a race today at Aqueduct with Rockin' Ali, who's a nice horse, and Ray continues to do well on his limited numbers of starters. All of them seem to run very well, and congratulations to him. Some sad news, Lynn Whiting, trainer of Little E.T., the Kentucky Derby winner, passed away this week. And by all accounts, he was a very well-respected and well-liked person and trainer. And racing is, you know, we'll miss him. On the breeding information, the sire Violence, who is a horse, horrible name, but a horse that was a Kentucky Derby contender a few years ago, he sired his first starter, and the first starter was a winner today at Keeneland. So it's always nice when a sire has his first horse to make it to the races, make it to the winner circle, and Violence, his starter was Buy, Sell, and Hold, and he won today at Keeneland. So that was kind of you know, very interesting, auspicious start for Violence. That may be a name that you may hear as a sire more and more going forward this year. To have someone win that early is somewhat impressive. I do want to take this opportunity now to thank last week's guests, Jimmy Toner and Rajiv Miraj, both of whom gave us their time and their thoughts last week, and we always thank them for their time and effort. And we shared a few laughs and a few insights, and so thank you to them. Again, if someone wants to give us a call, let me read out the number one more time. It's 646-716-4442. We are happy to announce that we have a new sponsor for our show, and the new sponsor is the fine restaurant in Floral Park, New York, just steps away from Belmont Park, and it's Poppy's Place Restaurant in Floral Park, New York. Poppy's is a hangout for racing people, fans, and racing participants. It's tremendous food in a friendly atmosphere, and it's located in Floral Park, New York, 12 Verbena Avenue, Floral Park. It has both a lunch and a dinner menu, and you certainly can, after the races when you're at Belmont, you can go to Poppy's Place and rehash the races, watch the replays, and probably talk to some trainers and some jockeys who had horses run that day. And it's also a good, wonderful place for lunch, particularly on the off days where there are many racing participants who take the off day and go have lunch at Poppy's. So it's always a good place, and it's a down home place. That's Poppy's, Poppy's, Poppy's Place Restaurant in Floral Park, New York. So if you get the opportunity to go to Belmont, put Poppy's Place in your in the back of your mind to go have an after race drink or dinner and eat right at the bar. It's plenty of conversation about horse racing, and you can talk about the day or talk about racing history. All of it is open to discussion at Poppy's. So we want to thank them. As you know, we also have the sponsor of John Stetton's. John Stetton's website, pass the wire.com, And PassTheWire.com continues to put out interesting publications each week. And I've even in the past written a number of things for them. So very happy with that. 646-716-4442. In a few moments, we'll be joined by Jim Mulvihill from the NTRA. I'm looking forward to having him, and I'm going to give him a call in a few minutes. Right now, I'm going to play the ad for listen to Dean Martin and PassTheWire.com.
A gal is like a racehorse. I play her to win.
For the most interesting, exciting, and unique columns and articles in the sport of Kings, read Past the Wire by Jonathan Stenton each week. Each and every week, Jonathan brings his unique perspective on the game to readers everywhere. You'll find his columns at PassTheWire.com, along with racing's latest news and so much more. It is truly horse racing uncensored, and you can get Past the Wire delivered right to your inbox each week. Jonathan's own private trip notes, second to none in the game, are even available through his tracking trips. Don't miss out. Visit PassTheWire.com for all the best in the sport of Kings. Imitate it, but never duplicate it. PassTheWire.com.
Who's got the action? Just lay it on the line. I'll bet you 10 to 1. Bet you 10 to 1. Bet you 10 to 1. You will be mine.
For the most interesting, exciting, and unique columns and articles in the sport of Kings, read Past the Wire by Jonathan Stenton each week. Each and every week, Jonathan brings his unique perspective on the game to readers everywhere. You'll find his columns at PassTheWire.com, along with racing's latest news and so much more. It is truly horse racing uncensored, and you can get Past the Wire delivered right to your inbox each week. Jonathan's own private trip notes, second to none in the game, are even available through his tracking trips. Don't miss out. Visit PassTheWire.com for all the best in the sport of Kings. Imitate it, but never duplicate it. PassTheWire.com.
Say, Baron, what horse did you play today? Our sweet potato, did she win? Did she play? Well, she showed.
Well, welcome back. With that, I think I'm going to try to patch in our guest, Jim Mulvihill. So hold on one moment, please, and we'll see whether Jim is available.
This is Jim.
Yeah, hello, Jim. Bill Gottimer. Welcome to Race Trackers.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Fine, thank you, Jim. Thank you for joining us tonight. I know you're busy with child duty, and I know it's always difficult to come on this time of night. But thank you for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to do it.
Jim, you probably need no introduction, but. For our listeners who may not be familiar with you, you're the director of media and industry relations for the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, and you wear a number of hats. And you tell us a little bit about what the, if you don't mind, what the NTRA does and your role.
Sure. Well, I'll start with my role. I've been in this position for close to 4 years now, and I would say my primary purpose is to serve as a liaison with the media and answer inquiries and try to place positive stories about horse racing. But, you know, we're a small organization, so everybody's job touches a little bit of everything that we do. And, you know, the NTRA is we're really focused on areas that racetracks and other organizations couldn't really tackle on their own. So our focus is on government relations, lobbying in Washington, D.C., the National Handicapping Championship, or as it's now called, the National Horse Players Championship, which is the largest nationwide promotion in horse racing and offers a purse of over $2.5 million annually in the finals in Las Vegas. We have the NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance, which is, you know, encouraging racetracks to adopt best practices in all areas of safety and integrity, really helping to push racetracks to do more for the safety of both horses and riders. And it's been very effective, especially under the current leadership of Steve Cook. And we also have NTRA Advantage, which is the group purchasing program that you don't hear a lot about, but it's what helps keep the NTRA going. All of our members, from racetracks to individual NHC players, can make purchases from NTRA partners like John Deere or Sherwin-Williams. And we get a little bit of a commission from that that goes back to supporting all of the NTRA programs. We are a nonprofit for the benefit of the industry. So everything that we earn from any of our revenue-generating areas just goes back to helping horse racing. So that's the quick overview of our main areas of focus. But like I said, we're always looking for new areas and ways that we can help the industry that that other organizations aren't able to handle on their own.
Right. Well, for lack of a better term, you're the industry group. You're the industry. Racing is often criticized for not having a commissioner's office or having a commissioner of racing,
mm-hmm.
because it's all different jurisdictions. But your organization acts a little bit as a clearinghouse for information among industry players. And as you said, you're active on the legislative front. That's particularly difficult these days. But you did have a big success this year with having the tax regulations changed on exotic bets, correct?
Yeah. So we're not quite there yet. We feel like we're, you know, maybe 98% of the way there, or the way we keep describing it is we're on the 1 yard line and we're just waiting to punch it into the end zone. But this is something that we've been working on for, you know, 5 years maybe, in terms of the way that we're approaching it now, and the industry has been working on for 20 years or more. And the idea is to redefine the way that we calculate parimutuel winnings when somebody has a signer. So most of your listeners, I'm sure, understand what a signer is, but what this would do would reduce the number of signers so that when people cash a big ticket, they get to keep more of their money. And it's one of the few issues you'll come across in racing where the entire industry is in agreement. Everybody wants this change to be made because it's going to be good for horse players, but it's also going to be good for racetracks. Bettors are going to take a lot of that money, reinvest it in the windows, and the churn is going to generate more handle for racetracks. That means more purse money for horsemen, more revenue for the state and for the, you know, for the federal government. So pretty much everyone who's part of the racetrack formula and the takeout structure would benefit from these changes. So everyone's behind it. We've made great progress with Treasury and the IRS, and we've gotten positive feedback from them, and we have reason to believe that it's going to be changed. It's really just a matter of at this point waiting for them to actually enact the change, which we will receive notice from that when they publish whatever their next rules update is. But we don't know exactly when it's coming, but we're hopeful it'll happen anytime now.
Right. I mean, I should have studied up on this more. As a matter of fact, I'm a tax attorney. I have a LLM in tax from years ago. But my understanding is that you're not looking to change the law. You're looking to change the regulations, which is an easier method to go about effectuating this change.
That is exactly right. And so when I specified that we've been working on it for about 5 years via this tact, you know, the NTRA had been working on it for years before, attempting to do it via changes in the law, but that did prove too difficult, and it's a hard thing to get lawmakers in Washington to understand. It's challenging to convince the industry to revisit some of the laws that already exist because people are scared of that idea. And so our lobbyists that we work with in D.C. eventually came up with this strategy, which is let's just work via IRS and the Treasury and get them to redefine the way that they interpret the existing rules. So that's the way we've done it, and we're closer than anyone's ever been. And like I said, hopefully any day now it goes through.
Now, that would be great. I mean, for our listeners, and I think everyone knows this, but for our listeners, that the tax law and the tax regulation as to when you had to declare winnings came about at a time when the exotic wagerings was less prevalent, and at a time when it really was a windfall to people. It was more akin to a lottery where people bet numbers or people bet birth dates and had a big windfall.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a feeling that the tax people should be part of it. You know, now it's become sophisticated enough that people play it as a regular wager. And you have the instance, the unfair instance, and Jim, I know you know this, but this is for our listeners. You know, the unfair instance where you have someone who may put $5,000 into a particular bet, get back $5,000 in the bet, and yet find himself to be taxed upon it as if he won $5,000. And it's just a mismatch between the reality of what's being bet and what's being won, and it's just it's so past time to change, but it is a niche. It's a niche area, and people probably – I must be hard to get sympathy from people who in Washington were paying attention to much larger numbers and see this as a bit of a as a bit of a luxury item. And I'm sure it's like pushing things uphill. It must be crazy.
Absolutely, it's not just getting them to sympathize; it's getting them to even understand what we're talking about. But one of our lobbyists actually used to work in Treasury and actually was able to help identify somebody pretty high up there who was a regular horse player, and we were able to meet with them and actually understood the issue. And really something like that you can't really predict or strategize on, but something like that really pushed it forward more quickly and more efficiently than anything that we ever could have done. You just need the right person to understand what you're talking about.
Right, because otherwise it's just lost. Well, good work on that. Continue, and I hope we get some success soon, and the hard work pays off. And I'm confident it will. Eventually, if not this year, certainly it will in time. One of the things that your job is to do is try to keep racing front and center in people's minds,
sure.
And over the years, I mean, I've, as you know, I do this show. We do this show, and it's we're trying to keep it in front of people's minds too. And it seems like
right.
In this game, sometimes every time you raise your head to say, "Hey, we're here," you know, something comes along to clobber you. And it seems like it's right. I mean, so many times racing has been on the verge of breaking through to the populace, and then you have either an unfortunate breakdown or a drug positive or some bad publicity. And do you find people are reticent to get involved or to sponsor things because of the fear of what's kind of around the corner?
I wouldn't say that. I'd say the question of media coverage is maybe a separate one from the question of sponsors and partners. But in general, I find that people are attracted to the stories of horse racing, and it's a rich topic for a writer. The people that I talk to are dying to write about horse racing because the characters are candid. You have a lot more access to the main players than in a lot of team sports. They'll actually tell you what they're thinking and what they know as opposed to just spewing cliches. So writers love to cover horse racing. It's more a matter of, a lot of them don't have the time, and their publications don't give them the freedom or make it a priority because there are more popular sports to cover. But the ones that are able to love to do it, general sports columnists and writers who have multiple beats, they put horse racing right at the top of their list because they like good stories, and horse racing is full of them. So You know, my job is to try and make it easier for those people to write about racing. So I do whatever I can to make their jobs easier and make introductions for them, or put stories front of their mind and just send them an email and let them know what's going on. But our problems with shrinking coverage don't have to do so much with the sport so much as just the state of the media. At least that's my belief.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, and I've been, you know, following this all my life in one form or another, and it seems like there's more information available now than ever, but it's in specialized and particularized areas. You know, the websites, a sponsor of this show, PassTheWire.com, I actually write a column for them once every month or once every 2 months. And,
right.
And you know, it's a tremendous outlet, and there's a number of others, and there's more information now about horse racing than there used to be, just because there's more outlets.
Oh.
I mean, you can get information almost everywhere now where you couldn't.
That I wholeheartedly agree with. I mean, there's more being written about horse racing than at any point in the history of this country. I mean, the volume of it is astounding, but yes, it's coming from more specialized sources. You know, the longer I'm in this, the less time I spend pitching stories to mainstream media and the more time I spend encouraging my colleagues at racetracks to tell our stories ourselves, because it's easier to do that with the internet than ever before. And, you know, rather than beat your head against the wall trying to get your local TV station to come out or your local sports columnist to come out, it's a lot easier just to make your own video or write a feature for your own website and then distribute it via social media and put it in front of the people that care. I think that's really where things are going for racetracks and my fellow publicists.
You know, Jim, I've told this story before. I'll bore our listeners again, but I had the pleasure of walking Hots when I was in high school for a trainer named Laurie Conley, who was a horse trainer and also was a fashion model. And the very first edition of Us magazine, which was then competing against People, featured our barn, our stable, and we had the People stable, and it was a puff piece between the beautiful supermodel who also was a horse trainer in the morning type of thing, you know.
That old story.
they sent somebody out, and Laurie Conley worked the horse, and the woman was very nice, and she said, you know, our photographer really didn't get a good shot. Do you think you could work the horse again for us?
Oh, jeez.
You know? Yeah, just showing a complete lack of understanding of what was going on around them. And that
sort of thing is rampant, you know, and that's what I try and do. My job is, you know, help prevent those situations by just helping these mainstream writers navigate horse racing so that they don't have to find themselves in that situation where they have no idea who they're talking to or they're asking a dumb question. Just, you know, give them as much information beforehand and make it as easy as possible for them.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's you're doing a yeoman's job there, because there's more information than ever. One thing that is that's now actually, and this is counter to that, but it goes along the line of you said the mainstream or the larger publications just don't have time for it or don't have the ability to cover it anymore. I guess the Los Angeles Times has dropped racing information, and they've received quite a firestorm from Mel Brooks of all people.
Yeah,
and
I saw
Paul
that.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, and that kind of stuff can make a difference. I mean, newspapers pay attention to the chatter that's going on online, and it does matter if fans and readers make calls to the editor or send letters to the editor. That stuff does make a difference, and certainly doesn't hurt when it's Mel Brooks or Carl Reiner.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so here you have Mel Brooks, who I believe is 90 years old, who is you know, complaining that his I kind of found it ironic. He's complaining that he likes to get his information from the newspaper, but yet he's complaining about that on Twitter. So somebody
on Twitter.
I'm sure it's not Mel Brooks doing his own Twitter. I don't think, but maybe
there is an irony there, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, but the newspaper entries, in the daily in a normal racing, a normal newspaper rather, is about as American as America can get. You know, for many, many generations, it was the one constant where you always knew where to find that and the baseball standings.
Certainly, and you know, I grew up loving the picks of the handicappers in the daily newspapers, and those have disappeared essentially from daily papers, and it's a shame because there are a lot of great handicappers out there that are making picks online, but less and less they're not the people that are actually at the racetrack every day who know the horsemen, who know the track biases, who are really intimately involved in that particular track. They might be making picks for 5 or 10 different tracks for their particular outlet. And so, you know, I don't trust those as much as I used to trust, you know, opening up the local newspaper and finding a handicapper that you knew was in the press box every day.
Right. Well, I guess we lost Russ Harris this year, who was among the most well-known and probably was, as Richard Witt, who's a listener to the show, points out, as far as picking pure winners go, Russ Harris was as good as anyone, or better than anyone. You know, he wasn't really a value person, but he used to say you can only pick the winner, you can't pick the price. You know, so he would routinely have 5 or 6 winners. And I want to thank one of our listeners, Joe Bonney, who's an editor of the Journal of Commerce, for sending me on the story about the Los Angeles Times dropping the racing stories. You know, Jim, I one of the things I'm going to write an article right now, and I don't want to steal the thunder away from the article I'm going to write for PassTheWire.com, but maybe the NTRA could be helpful in this. And there's been a lot of aggravation and a lot of criticism in recent weeks of racetracks either intentionally or unintentionally running their big races right on top of each other, which plays havoc with fans and gamblers alike. And I guess, for lack of anybody else doing it, I think I'm going to do it at Racetrackers. I'm going to coin the phrase a race card of national significance. And there's probably only two or three a week. You know, most handicappers would know who it is and what race card would be the ones that you would watch. And I guess I'll rely on Mike Watchmaker, who I don't know, because he always seems to, and for years and years, and he's always pointed out where the biggest races are in the racing form. But I'd like to somehow see if we could get a pledge from racetrack operators that if they are a card of, you know, race card of national significance for the term, to coin the term, that they would try to avoid running on top of each other. It doesn't seem like it could benefit them to do so, and I don't know why it continues to happen.
Well, you know, it's complicated, and I've been there as, you know, as someone who's worked at racetracks and knowing the mutuals managers and you know, have some understanding of how it works. It's not as simple as a lot of players think, and yet we do see situations that are completely, frankly, unforgivable. And sometimes I can't explain why there are two grade ones at two major tracks going off right on top of each other. Sometimes those situations just seem ridiculous. But on a more regular basis, it's a really complicated formula, because you're not one particular track's biggest competitor might not necessarily be the other biggest track that's running that day. It might be the other track in their region. So that might be the one that they're basing their times on more than, you know, it might not be New York versus Gulfstream. It might be, you know, New York might be looking at Monmouth. I mean, that's not a great example, but maybe when you look at, say, like Fairgrounds, where I used to work, Fairgrounds would be looking at Oaklawn first, and you might be looking at the other Louisiana track that's running. But then if you're basing your decisions on those two, then you might be running on top of Gulfstream, or you might be running on top of New York, and then people are going crazy because that's happened. But it's a really delicate balance, because there are a lot of tracks out there, and every track is going to do what's best for their bottom line, frankly. So I can tell you that in my experience, there are very few tracks where there there isn't at least one person and usually multiple people who are watching the post times extremely closely, understand the issues, and are making the best decisions for their track, and they're in communication with the stewards, who sometimes can override the mutual manager and say, these horses need to go to the gate. They've been circling for 5 minutes. This is ridiculous.
Right.
And, you know, there are just so many ways that it can get thrown off. And then you have a horse act up in the gate, or you have a horse that's late coming out of the paddock. And, you know, so many ways that your published post times can get all out of whack. So it's a really complicated puzzle. Most tracks are doing the best that they can. I just wish we did a better job of communicating that and explaining that. I saw John Scheinman on Facebook the other day talking about how he had called Keeneland and talked to the Mutuals manager. And Jim Goodman there did an incredible job of explaining to him exactly why they made the decisions they made. And he felt a lot better about it. But you don't get those explanations
right.
on a regular basis. So maybe we do need to talk to racetracks and figure out, like, can we have the managers, the Mutuals managers, you know, blogging or going on TV once in a while just to explain these things to people.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. Well, this is not to slight anyone else, but it's hard to imagine someone who cares more about the betting public than Jim Goodman. I mean, he always seems to be right on top of it and always trying to do the best. And he's a big reason, in my opinion, why Keeneland puts on such a tremendous show.
Agreed.
All the time. And, you know, he understands. And if you've ever been to the green room at Keeneland's, you just know how that's perfectly designed with the player in mind, and, you know, really, really makes you feel like you're a valued participant. I think you're 100% right as far as, you know, who the competitors typically are. But I guess racing has suffered over the years from not being nationally televised continually, and, you know, some would say they missed the boat back in the 50s with the beginning of television for a whole host
for
of
sure.
reasons, you know. But now it seems to have that in TVG, and I just don't think there's really any longer on big race days, there's no longer really a New York player versus a Kentucky player versus a Florida player. I think there are races, and again, the phrase national significance, like the whole card is, or the whole second half of the card is of interest to everybody in the country. And those are really the only times when it really matters. I mean, I can't get bent out of shape about, you know, the early races on a card overlapping on other things, because it is impossible to manage. But it just would seem that, you know, if there's 10 races, 5 at each racetrack, because it's the same pool of players who are betting them, I think. I don't think it's a wildly different pool of people who are playing, and they'd play all 10 races if they could. But, you know, being forced to kind of juggle back and forth is, you know, can be frustrating.
Yeah, and if you're one of the smaller tracks or even a B-level track, you're trying to find how you fit in with the A track. So
right.
if track one is going off at the top of the hour and track two is going off at the bottom of the hour, and then track three is going off at quarter after, you know, you might want to stay off the biggest race in the country. But at the same time, if you do that, you might be running on top of, again, somebody else that's your biggest competitor. So I don't know. It's an impossible puzzle. Can we do better? Certainly. But yeah, I'd say the number one thing we do have to do is just explain to the bettors that this isn't a case where people are asleep at the wheel and aren't trying. It's just a puzzle that doesn't always fall into place.
Right. Well, you know, along those lines, speaking about the second tier tracks or the not the top five, you know, historically, of course, Saturday is always the day where everybody runs their big race, and Saturday was, you know, traditionally the day for stakes races and the like. And I guess when Sunday racing came in the late 70s, I still remember that as always being even in New York now, you still can't race on Easter or Sunday, because that's a vestige of getting racing past Sunday racing past. You know, now you can do anything on a Sunday. You can probably buy a hand grenade and have a human sacrifice somewhere, but you know, you can't have a race. But I think there was a concerted effort at that time to make by New York Racing at least, to make Sunday a focus of a fun kind of family day and say it was better than a Tuesday, but not really to have it, you know, hardcore gambling focused. And it seems like that has carried over to many tracks. And sometimes the Sunday cards are so disappointing in comparison to the Saturday cards. I would think that some track would pick up and try to go counter and make their big card the Sunday card, just to kind of gobble up all that handle.
It's not unprecedented, and you make a really fair point. I mean, you know, when I was growing up, the Louisiana Derby was frequently run on Sundays, usually the day after the Florida Derby, instead of having three prep races on Saturday, why not, you know, the Louisiana Derby could just be run on Sunday and could own the day. I don't have a good reason for you why that's not done more often. I mean, there's definitely more people playing on Saturday, but yeah, again, if you're one of the secondary racetracks, then it's always better to have a day to yourself. And that's why we see certain tracks running on Mondays and Tuesdays.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Monday and Tuesday has been a lifesaver for Finger Lakes, and Finger Lakes needs a number of lifesavers. It just recently got one, but a lot of the small tracks, Mahoning Valley, I guess, has a big handle on Tuesday. Parks has a big handle on Tuesday. Well, I guess the one other thing that I did want to speak to you about, and I guess there's a lot of feeling, and I'm wondering if the NTRA has a feeling on it. There's a feeling that the new Department of Justice with this new administration's Attorney General seems to have a pretty anti-gambling bent, and it seems like there's going to be some crackdowns or some curbing of internet gambling other than horse racing.
Sure.
And it seems like racing could actually, in a strange way, benefit by that. Is that something that's on the NTRA's radar?
It's something we definitely watch. You know, a lot of the rhetoric coming from Jeff Sessions is unappealing, frankly. But legally, I mean, everything we're doing is legal and has been for a long time. And I wouldn't say that the NTRA is in any way scared or overreacting to any of it. We feel we're on pretty solid ground and well, very solid ground. That's why we're not not overly concerned. But we always watch everything in Washington, D.C. that has anything to do with gambling or gaming in general. I mean, that's, you know, the lobbying firm that we have there, the Alpine Group, that is what they get paid for, is to monitor everything that has to do with gaming, whether it's parimutuel or otherwise, and look at it from every perspective that it could affect us and keep us abreast of that. And then they report back to Alex Waldrop, and he ponders what the NTRA position should be. But, I mean, we'll watch it closely for sure. But as of now, I don't think there's any reason for horse players or any racing fans to feel like, online wagering or any other form of parimutuel wagering as we know it now is under threat.
You know, I agree. I think the parimutuel wagering on horse racing is the one that's most explicitly permitted. It would take, you know, more than an antagonistic Justice Department to interfere. I'm thinking some of the other forms of online wagering may have a little bit more of a worry. But.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, if certain other forms of online gambling were outlawed, that could be a boost to racing. But I wouldn't say that that's something that we're rooting for. I think, you know, the proliferation and increasing popularity of online gambling across the board is a good thing for horse racing. And, you know, we'd rather just see that pie continue to grow rather than see other forms of online gambling go down.
Right, I agree, and I sat through a presentation on what's called enterprise betting out in Las Vegas. It was a seminar in New York on sports law just this week, and they explained enterprise betting, and you know, my my takeaway was that, you know, I want the list of people who get involved in enterprise betting, because it seems so onerous and so stupid as to be a mailing list I'd want to have to sell the Brooklyn Bridge to. You know, it was this whole convoluted thing where you can, you know, you can wire money into a bank in Nevada, and you can, you know, and you don't make the selection on the sports team. Someone else makes it for you, and if it wins, you give them 30%. And it seemed a little bit of a modern version of the Sting more than anything else, you know. But
it sounds like a tout service, really.
Well, it is a tout service. It's clearly a tout service, and I think in order to allow you to bet from outside of Las Vegas, it has to be a tout service, because you can't have any decision in who you bet. It was some you know, Rube Goldberg machinations to, you know, as opposed to going down to the local barbershop or the local candy store and betting it with someone who would take whatever action you want on any football game. But
when I hear things like that, it just boggles my mind that people would rather do something like that than bet legally on horse racing.
I agree. The whole thing was mind boggling. Well, Jim, I want to thank you. I know this has been fascinating, and I could speak to you forever. I know our listeners could too. I mean, I have this dream that, and I've written a little bit about, and it'll probably never come to pass. But I think the ultimate race we want to eventually have is to somehow tie a major horse race into halftime of the Super Bowl. I think once we tap into that pie, I think we finally, you know, at that point we've reached the national, you know, we could have a handle on that on that race. And I've kind of given it some thought. I think you need about, to be safe, I think you need 6 minutes worth of time, because if it's a mile and an eighth, the race is 2 minutes give or take, and you need 2 minutes to load them into the gate on TV, and you know, you have to have an extra 2 minutes for the horse who rears up. But you know,
hey, I mean, it'd be hard to get it on the same network as the Super Bowl, but hey, I mean, if they can put together the Puppy Bowl and some of that other stuff that goes on at halftime, then we should be able to run a race.
Well, I was even thinking that, you know, at if $3 million dollars a minute, 6 minutes, you know, $18 million, and if you cut the NFL in for the NFL likes revenue more than it likes anything, and if you cut the NFL in for you know, a percentage of the handle above a certain number, I think maybe you might even get the discount on the $3 million a minute. But you know, so we'll I'll keep working. I'll keep massaging that.
I'd love to see it. That's for sure.
Right. Well, Jim, I love to have you back anytime. We didn't even talk about who you'd like in the Derby and what your thoughts are as to this year's upcoming stars. But there's a lot of great stories.
Oh, absolutely. And since you asked, I will tell you that as of now, just beyond the obvious horses, the long shot, I mean, there's going to be a ton of great prices, but the long shot that I've been touting has been Taprit. I still think his Tampa Bay Derby winning move was phenomenal, and just he passed the eye test for me that day. And even though he flattened out in the Bluegrass, that wasn't the race that he needed. He was already in the Derby, and he didn't need to be cranked up that day, and I'm willing to give him another chance and hope that he can unleash another move around the far turn at Churchill like he did at Tampa.
Excellent. Well, I mean, it seems like that's going to be, again, from a handicapping standpoint, obviously going to be a tremendous betting race, but from a handicapping standpoint, it seems like it's going to be a crowded last move around. There's so many horses who run late this year that it's going to be kind of a crowd in the back, I would think, early on through the race. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's entered and who manages to take the early initiative in that race.
Yeah, and that's it's no longer suicide to be, you know, towards the front in the Derby. I mean, ever since we got the point system, you don't have those sprinting speed balls that are going to go 109 and set it up for closers. I mean, it's now a lot more practical to actually be close up to the pace and get a cleaner trip.
Well, you're right. I mean, that was the biggest effect of having the point system was to take away horses who were pure sprinters. And there was a time there, I guess, where people took some foolish, in my opinion, foolish gratification by at one point leading the Kentucky Derby. Right? It was like,
yep.
You know,
yep.
I just want to say my horse was in front in the Kentucky Derby, you know, which is you know, it's a little bit like being first in the first in trench warfare, going over the top. You don't really want to be the first one to get punched in the face, but there was kind of a desire to do that, and the point system has largely taken that away, and that's a good thing.
I think so. I think, you know, the horses that are there now and have been the last few years all have earned the right to be there, and they're horses that are that you know can go two turns, and it makes it a lot more fair and interesting race, my perspective.
Right. Right. Well, and I guess you also have a couple of horses now who already are pointing towards the Preakness and the Belmont. And, of course, that's always important because, well, there's so much excitement for a 20-horse field. Sometimes those other horse races come up light. And there already seems to be some trainers who are already pointing towards towards the Belmont. And our next guest, Jonathan Stanton, already has his Belmont horse picked out for him. It's Bob Baffert's reached. Yeah. He's a detailed handicapper of all type. He looks far ahead, but he likes reach the world for Bob Baffert to win the Belmont because they've already backed off on going to the Derby with him, and he'll be fresh and ready to come east and ready to go a mile and a half. So another exciting.
I like it.
You know, it's almost one. And I'll let you go. One of the questions that we posed was, you know, does Arrogate's success and just his outstanding performance, and just head and shoulders above everybody right now, does it take away from this year's Triple Crown? And I guess at first you think it does, but then there's a reason why these races have been such a big deal for 100 and somewhat years, and the excitement starts to build,
yeah.
You know, even in the face of someone who's so good as Arrogate, rather.
Oh my gosh, yeah, there's no change to anyone's desire to win the Triple Crown races. And I can't imagine that there's a single horseman out there that was sitting around this winter thinking like, we got a horse that could be ready for the spring, but maybe we'll just sit back and try to go that Travers Breeders' Cup route. I mean, that
yeah.
would be an insane thing to do to one, think that you have a horse that good, and two, to skip the Derby trail when there's so much money out there for a good 3-year-old, not the Triple Crown so much as the prep races and then the other, you know, 3-year-old, the other derbies around the Midwest over the summer. I mean, if you've got a good 3-year-old,
right.
you want him ready in the spring, and you should be going for the Derby.
Exactly. Well, Jim, I can't thank you enough. I certainly hope you'll come back, and I thank you for
coming anytime.
On tonight. And yeah, it's you know, my pleasure. I've enjoyed this greatly, and we'll let you get back to home duties there. And we'll talk to John Stanton now. Thanks so much. Jim Mulvihill from the NTRA. Thank you, Jim.
Awesome. Anytime, Bill. Thanks, man.
As I said, we have Jonathan Stanton waiting to come on board, and let's go to Jonathan right now. Good evening, Jonathan.
Hi,
welcome to Race Trackers.
Thank you for having me. How are you?
Fine, thanks. We just had a nice conversation with Jim Mulvihill from NTRA, and we spoke about your publication, PassTheWire.com. He's well familiar with it, and talked about some of the some of the ideas we've floated, you know, floated over the years and through your publication.
To hear, and I appreciate that, and I heard a lot of the conversation and I enjoyed it. And I never realized he was as astute a handicapper as he is.
Okay. You like Tappert as well, I gather?
No, I didn't say that. But I respect his reasoning and understand his logic. And I like to see people who put in their homework and kind of look outside the box. Is that the right word? I mean, I guess that works, yeah. You know, I kind of like people who look outside the box and, you know, not for the obvious. I made a comment today that, you know, a horse player looks at a race
and expects a horse to do the same thing every time and do what they did last time. But a handicapper looks for the reason that they won't. So I kind of like that handicapper approach. So, you know, I like people who land on not-so-obvious choices.
No, I agree. Earlier on in the show, we heard from Kieran McLaughlin, and he talked about Mo Heyman coming back on May 6th. So I don't know. That may be news. I don't know if anybody else has reported that yet. But he'll run back at Belmont on May 6th, which is Derby Day, and he'll probably face Connect, which could be a tough assignment there. But it's nice to see Mo Heyman come back.
Well, I think that's a great, great thing. And that's going to be an interesting day because that's going to be a race worth watching that's not being run at Churchill Downs.
Yeah, that's right.
That doesn't happen a lot on Derby Day. Usually Derby Day, we're all watching every race at Churchill Downs, you know. But looks like we'll have something else to look at that day.
Yeah, he also told us about two maiden fillies who he's high on, a horse called Marshall Plan, which is, I guess, easy enough to remember if you're a World War II history buff. The Marshall Plan rebuilt Europe. And a horse called Fayette, and I guess that's a half to Rachel Alexandra, so Fayak, I
guess.
What's the horse
name? Like A-M-E?
No, I think it's Arabic. It's Fayak. The horse has run twice. It's the half to Rachel Alexandra.
Okay. Yes, I know the horse well. I like the horse after the first start, and then he kind of disappointed in the second start. So, yes, I know the horse well.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and listen to what Kieran said about that second start, but I think he said the horse was too close to the pace early. I think he's what he said.
Yeah, what happened was first time out, the horse came from way out of it, flew home, and then next time out at Keeneland, I think opening week, went to the lead and quit in what looked to be a pretty salty field. So, yeah, I thought that horse had some ability myself.
Yeah, we congratulated him on his four win day last week. It's only been done one time before, and he indicated that three out of the four races did not go the way he planned. That he expected to be on the lead in all three of them, and all three of them the horse broke bad, and they had to call an audible and come from way out of it. Let you know.
That's okay. A win is a win.
Yeah, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men. And he was also very forthcoming and said that, you know, beating, they may have gotten a break in beating Lady Eli because they got stopped and couldn't get through. And Lady Eli likes to have a target. And if they had gotten a jump on Lady Eli, he said, who knows, maybe Lady Eli would have fought on to go get them instead of them going to get Lady Eli.
Very possible.
Yeah, but enough about that. Do you have any observations from last week that jump off the page?
No, I don't think anything that jumps off the page. No, I think it was an interesting week. I think the Derby picture got maybe a little more clearer. I don't know a whole lot more clearer. I think Classic Empire obviously put himself back into the mix and into the conversation. I'm not ready to hand him the roses yet, but he certainly, showed that he's back, so to speak, and worthy of consideration. So I think that was a good and interesting development. That's kind of, you know, another piece to the puzzle this year, but I think it remains a very interesting, wide open, great betting Kentucky Derby, and I think that it's just going to be a hell of a race. I think there's about six or seven horses that are very difficult, in my opinion, to separate.
No, I agree. And a lot of them have a lot of, as you heard me speak with Jim Mulvihill, a lot of them have the same style, and I think that could be problematic too. You know, everybody can't launch their rally at the same time. You know, they can, but it's you know, it's largely the one who gets the smoother trip from there. My impression, John, on Classic Empire was I thought he worked really hard to win, and not taking anything away from his win, but the question is, did he work really hard and did he get something out of it, or did he work hard and will find it hard to come back in 3 weeks? And I don't think you'll know that until you see how well he works in the next, in the next week or so.
I agree. I think it's very hard to know that, and I think that even how he works, you know, trainers get fooled by that all the time. You know, horses are eating up and working great, and, you know, they don't think they're going to regress, and sure enough, they do. So I think very good point. My whole approach to the Derby this year is I'm looking for somebody that fits one of two categories. I'm looking for somebody to, and like the horse Jim mentioned, like Capric, I'm looking for somebody to bounce back off a subpar effort or somebody to jump forward and really, you know, take that big three-year-old move forward that we haven't seen yet from them.
Right.
I'm looking more in that area than I am at the Classic Empires and the McCrackens and, you know, the obvious ones who we already kind of seeing what they can do. I'm looking for somebody
right.
to either back or kind of show us what they can do that we haven't seen yet, if that makes sense.
Right, right. Someone who breaks through with a you know, mature effort. Yeah, I find myself being increasingly drawn to Gervin just because, well, two reasons. One, he was so professional both times. You know, it seems like he just did everything correctly. And, you know, the times weren't eye-popping, but it seems like all those horses in those races have come out and run so well. I forget the horse who won the Lexington. I forget his name, Investment Decision or Investment. You know, he came out of the Louisiana Derby, and he ran well. And it seems like everyone who comes out of those races has run well. And maybe Gervin's being overlooked.
You know, he's definitely being overlooked. I think of the horses that have won, you know, some of the major preps and kind of asserted themselves, he's the one that gets no respect, really. And,
right.
You know, he's never lost on regular dirt. He's undefeated on the dirt. And he's really, he's kind of like overlooked. He's like, you know, he doesn't get mentioned in that top group. And I think he's certainly done enough resume-wise to at least be in that discussion.
Yeah, I'm just finding myself seeing him as the one who seems to change leads properly and the one who seems to, you know, be able to go inside or outside. And, you know, I'll be interested to see how he works. And I guess picking up Mike Smith always helps, too. So
it certainly doesn't hurt.
Give me your opinion on what was you thought was the most impressive effort over the week. It was, in my opinion, it was either Whitmore or Lady Aurelia. What were your thoughts?
I would say it was Lady Aurelia, in my humble opinion. I think Whitmore, I think we can all agree, is a heck of a good sprinter. I think we know that now. And I think, you know, he beat a bunch of horses that he's kind of already showed us that he's better than.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. Lady Aurelia, I think, had a couple more question marks. And I think she answered them loud and clear. And I think she kind of served notice that she is going to be a force to be reckoned with, sprinting on the turf, maybe even up to 7/8 or a mile. I know they're going to Royal Ascot with her, so that's always exciting. So I think she really kind of asserted herself and really showed that she's, you know, she's back and as good as ever. And, you know, I would have to say that was the most impressive performance of the weekend, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was very impressive, and I agree with you. I mean, Whitmore visually was tremendously impressive, but he's beating the same horses again, and it doesn't mean he can't beat tougher, but you just don't know until he does it. I guess they're going to go, if I read correctly, they're going to go to one of the races. I forget what it is, but on the undercard of the Kentucky Derby with Whitmore. So we'll see, you know, whether he can duplicate that form, you know, somewhere other than Oaklawn Park. He's, as you said, he's a sprinter that's going to have to be dealt with. John, this week doesn't seem like there's a lot of interest this week. This is kind of the off week, right? Coming in the races, there's no Derby preps. The older horses really don't really have anything going on this week other than the Charlestown Classic in Charlestown, West Virginia, which came up, in my opinion, a little bit light for a $1.25 million race. And I guess the only other thing I see that's interesting so far, and I haven't really looked at everything, but is Shagoff, who was on the Derby trail last year before going over the top in the Wood Memorial. He returns to the races for Chad Brown at Aqueduct on Sunday. But otherwise, I didn't see too much of interest. Did anything catch your eye?
No, not really. Kind of a quiet week, I think. You know, we got the Derby race that the Derby kind of looked forward to, and I think things kind of quiet down. I'm sure Keeneland will come up with some good cards before they close altogether, but little bit of a quiet, I don't want to say downtime, but a little bit of a quiet time, no?
Yeah, so this is the week where you can reconnect with old friends and family members and you know, get all your social stuff out and talk to people as opposed to being going to the TV on a Saturday, right? This is one Saturday.
I wish I had that luxury. I'll be working, studying those Derby horses and undercard horses and trying to get a head start in what I'll be dealing with that week. So I'll try and use it.
okay, productively.
To my advantage. We'll see how. You can ask me on May 7th how that worked out. So,
yeah, exactly. Some other interest of note that we spoke about earlier, you know, Teppan has retired, and I guess they did the right thing by her. She just wasn't as interested in training as she's been in the past. So they, you know, discretion is the better part of value. Valor, she's done enough, and they're sending her off to the breeding shed.
I agree. I think it was time. I think there wasn't much left for her to accomplish. She's got a fantastic resume, and when the time comes, the time comes.
Right, right. But she was fun. I mean, I still don't know how I lost on her in Saratoga, where she got caught in the last jump. I'll have to go back and watch it one more time because I watched it live, and I thought it was an optical illusion, but it was real.
We all have a few of those losses.
Yeah, she went on then to win everywhere else, including England right after that. But, you know, what are you going to do?
No, we all have a few of those that we just can't understand how they lost that particular day. But happens to the best of us. It's not the last time it's going to happen to you, though.
Yeah, exactly. Well, before we wrap up, did you see there was a race today, and it was at Aqueduct, and I think it was Mike Rapoli's horse. But did you see that horse Shy and bolt to the outside fence today?
Was it the 2-year-old or no?
I think so. Let me pull it up. The horse was 4 or 5.
I saw when they ran an entry, two 2-year-olds that Fletcher ran, and I think they ran 1-2. And one of them did run on the far outside. I didn't notice that he bolted. I did notice that he did go pretty wide, though.
Let me just pull it up here. Make sure I have it right before we. Somebody made the comment that today being 4/20 is National Marijuana Day, and he made the point that it looked like the horse decided to bolt to the outside to smoke a marijuana cigarette midway through the stretch. But no, it wasn't. It wasn't that race. That race they ran 1-2, and they were 1-5. That was that's the 2-year-old race, and they won. They ran first and second for Todd Pletcher. But later on the card,
well, I must be getting really old and out of touch because I can honestly say that I did not even know we had a National Marijuana Day in the United States.
That's funny. Yeah.
And I thought that's something that I would have known, but I guess not.
Yeah. I think it was the Grateful Dead, I think, pushed the vernacular of marijuana being 420, and that translated into the date April 20th. I think urban legend has it that it started in California, where a group of high school students each day at 420 after basketball practice would go out searching for the perfect marijuana field that was a part of the local lore, that there was a perfect marijuana field that existed up in the hills, and these guys decided to take it upon themselves to find it. They never did find it, but they left every day from the parking lot at 420 on their search, and that became part of a Grateful Dead song, and then later part of High Times magazine pushed it, and the next thing you know, it's their national day. As a matter of fact, a small trivia note: Quentin Tarantino, who's the producer of the movies, is from that area out in Marin County in California, and he made the movie Pulp Fiction. And whenever you look at Pulp Fiction, in every scene there's a clock, and it's always 4:20. That was his inside joke.
Well, I'm a big fan of Quentin Tarantino, so I knew that.
So when you look at Pulp Fiction, you know, look at that in the background. It's always 4:20 whenever they're doing anything important.
I knew that. I just didn't know about the marijuana day.
That's funny. But this is a horse by it was from Rapoli, Mike Rapoli, Todd Pletcher. The horse was 4-5. And it was a maiden claiming, so it was a maiden 25 claimer, so it's, you know, not high and more focused. And I'm sure it's Uncle. It must be an Uncle Mo, right?
Yes.
But he bolted on the. If you get a chance to look at it, watch it, because he bolted inside the quarter pole, and he bolted right to the outside fence. And what's interesting is the denizens of Aqueduct on the apron there seemed completely unfazed and completely unconcerned that he's going to leap that fence right into them. You know, they just stand there. You know, and when I was watching, I was like, wow, you know, he's going to wind up going right over that outside fence, but he didn't. He managed to hold on for second, despite the fact that he bolted to the outside fence. But it's in the category of how do you lose a race. This is one to watch, because he had the leader dead to rights, and he looked like he was going to go on and win by 10 lengths. The next thing you know, he just made a right-hand turn. And to Rajiv Miraj's credit, he kept riding as hard as he could and wound up holding off in the win. So that was today's fifth race at Aqueduct. It's worth taking a look at just for fun.
I certainly will.
Right. Well, with that, John, do you have any selections for this week, or nothing pressing?
Nah, nothing yet. I'm behind as usual, and there's really nothing that exciting. So we'll play it by ear for now.
Good. All right. Well, I'm working on another column for you for PassTheWire.com. I should have that to you by Monday. And it's a little of some of the things we touched upon with Jim Mulvihill, and hopefully it'll get some interest. And you know, with that, I'll play the commercial again. We played it a little bit before. We'll play it again for you for PassTheWire.com. And what is the service, John? What is it called? The service that's your most popular service?
Well, really, I like to think that the column is really the anchor of the site and what I'm all about. But the service that I also offer is Tracking Trips, which is a trip note service that has a very small monthly subscription fee. It's, I think, $12.95 a month, and there are even some discounts available to that. And it provides track bias information and trip notes on different horses and, you know, certain horses I'm watching, like a watch list and, you know, spot place selections that I come up with from time to time. So it's an awful lot of information. I've even got a section that I call Clubhouse Notes on there, where I kind of give little, you know, insight and tidbits that I don't put in the columns that are really for the subscribing members. So it's just an information section of the website that's really a trip note section and helps people learn how to watch races and observe things that maybe, you know, the casual fan doesn't see.
Excellent. And when you subscribe to that, do you send out information to the listener, to the members, or do the members have access to look it up on the internet themselves?
They have access. They both. I send out emails specifically to members. I send out emails to people that just subscribe to the site and the column, but the members actually do have access to a members-only section that has all that information in it, so they can log on anytime and see it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, good. I mean, I know you have a number of winners through that, and people rave about it, and I speak directly to you about things, but I have to get on that service and just get familiar with it myself, but it's hard to imagine. It's not worth $2 exact a box for the course of the month. So it's an invaluable service.
We have a lot of fun on there. I mean, we call it a membership because it is a membership, and we exchange a lot of information and ideas. And it's we have a lot of fun with it and make a couple of little scores along the way as well. So
excellent. All right. Well, that's PassTheWire.com. John, I thank you so much for. Good luck this weekend working on divining the future, and keep up the good work. And let me play the Pass the Wire advertisement, then the song, and we'll be out. We'll call it a short show this week because it's a lack of information.
Okay,
John
Bill,
Stetton,
so
everyone.
Thanks
John.
For the most interesting, exciting, and unique columns and articles in the sport of Kings, read Pass the Wire by Jonathan Stenton each week. Each and every week, Jonathan brings his unique perspective on the game to readers everywhere. You'll find his columns at PassTheWire.com, along with racing's latest news and so much more. It is truly horse racing uncensored, and you can get Pass the Wire delivered right to your inbox each week. Jonathan's own private trip notes, second to none in the game, are even available through his tracking trip. Don't miss out. Visit PassTheWire.com for all the best in the sport of King. Imitate it, but never duplicate it. PassTheWire.com.
A gal is like a racehorse. I play her to win.
For the most interesting, exciting, and unique columns and articles in the sport of Kings, read Pass the Wire by Jonathan Stenton each week. Each and every week, Jonathan brings his unique perspective on the game to readers everywhere. You'll find his columns at PassTheWire.com, along with racing's latest news and so much more. It is truly horse racing uncensored, and you can get Pass the Wire delivered right to your inbox each week. Jonathan's own private trip notes, second to none in the game, are even available through his tracking trips. Don't miss out. Visit PassTheWire.com for all the best in the sport of King. Imitate it, but never duplicate it. PassTheWire.com.
Who's got the action? Just lay it on the line. I'll bet you 10 to 1. Bet you 10 to 1. Bet you 10 to 1. You will be mine. This is what I love.